This is Dojo Live, Tech Without Borders, stories that bring us together. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Dojo Live this Thursday, July 27th, 2023. My name is Kim Lantis, and as per the usual, it's my pleasure to be co-hosting today along with America Guerrero.
Hello, everybody. Nice to meet you, Dennis.
Yes, nice to meet you, Dennis. Dennis Kent, co-founder and CEO of Prolific Machines. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's going to be a really fun conversation. I mean, pre-show, we bantered back and forth. I can tell that you've got a really cool energy, and I'm looking forward to get to knowing you as well as Prolific Machines better. So let's just do that. If you could kick us off, Dennis, with your story, what's your passion and what's led up to Prolific Machines?
Where to begin? My parents were Turkish immigrants to the UK. They had sex at the perfect time. I was born in the UK, very lucky baby. I grew up in the UK. I studied cellular and molecular medicine. And then I went into the human health industry. So initially went in and studied CD8 T cells in the context of tumor immunology, trying to basically fight cancers with your immune system. And then I went into the pharmaceutical industry. I was working at GlaxoSmithKline, and we were trying to find a cure for asthma, which was fun. I have asthma and I hate using my inhaler, so I like the idea of just a single dose cure. And being in a 45,000 person company like GSK was also had its challenges.
And oh gosh, I can't even imagine.
A lot of bureaucracy, a lot of layers of, you know, committees and subcommittees, and it's hard for things to get done. So I left. I went back into academia. I did a master's in research and then a PhD. During my PhD, I was really researching how stem cells work in the context of the liver. So we were trying to understand how the liver regenerates, doing stem cell screens for various different liver diseases. And we were basically trying to find a drug. One of the projects was trying to find a drug for this liver disease called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency.
Wow.
All of this to say, I spent most of my career working in human health, and then I became quite interested in planetary health for a number of reasons, both some things that were happening in my personal life, but also some things that I was just seeing in the world around me. And it became quite clear that climate change and ecological destruction is
real.
An existential risk.
Yes, it's completely real. I mean, I know people very close to me who still laugh and scoff at global warming and this idea, but I'm like, every summer gets hotter than the summer before it, and this one in particular, I'm like, man, I know last year was insane for the UK, but even here in Hermosillo, Sonora, it's the Sonoran desert, of course it's going to get hot, but it's just crazy hot. I can't believe it.
Yeah, and some places are more cold.
People,
global warming makes everywhere warmer, actually will make some places colder.
Exactly.
It is a concerning topic because humans, we're very reactive as a species. We're not very proactive. And this is one of those problems where being proactive really pays off. And so,
like in the 80s when we all rallied around saving the ozone layer.
Yeah.
Why can't we do that again? Right. I think it was the 80s, early 90s. I do remember it. So let's get on the topic here then of planetary health and Prolific Machines, your new passion. What is it that you're doing, the problem that you're solving?
My parents would describe me as a modern day butcher. We're basically trying to
Sweeney Todd.
We're doing a number of things, but it all boils down to inventing new ways to grow and control stem cells. And the problem that we're solving is that growing cells, especially mammalian cells, is not trivial. It's very expensive. It is not very reproducible using current methods. And it is difficult. The cells get contaminated. They don't always do what you want. And so We're trying to change the process and invent a new way to do this, one which can eliminate the expensive inputs, of which there are many, increase yields, increase reproducibility, and make interesting products. So there's a number of applications of that. One application is doing this with the cells of cows and sheep and other animals that we eat, so that you can make the meats of those animals. It's not fake meat. It is not, in my view, a meat alternative. It is real meat made from the cells of the animal. So it's.
So if you were to look under this, a cow that was just butchered this morning and one that was grown in the lab under a microscope or wherever,
In the
you.
future, you would not be able to tell the difference.
Wow. Wow.
And the problem in cultured meat, for a long time has not been, can you make it? And it has not been, does it taste good? So these questions are good questions, but they've already been answered. So people have already made
Yes and yes.
and it does taste good.
Well, I can remember me going back too. I mean, like, what was it? Like, cloning the sheep. What was her name? Dolly, I think it was.
Yes.
The ideas of using, growing pig hearts for transplants and things like that. So, yeah, I guess yes and yes, the technology exists. So,
There is
what
a,
is
there
it?
is there, there, there is still an outstanding question that has not been addressed by the field. The outstanding
Okay.
question is, can anyone make cultured meat with a cost structure that can support a profitable business? And
And 6, 7 billion people.
yes. Yes, but unfortunately, like within the confines of capitalism, you have to find a way to also make this profitable because it is extremely capital intensive business. You actually have to put steel in the ground, you have to build giant facilities, it's billions of dollars of investment. Nobody will make that investment unless there's a way to make this profitable. And so even though I am, I would not describe myself as a red-blooded capitalist, but it is important that
You do have to eat. Gotta make some money,
it
right?
is important that you build a technology stack that can eventually make you profitable and ideally make you extremely profitable. And that's not the motivation for prolific machines, but it is what is required to have the planetary impact that you want to have.
To save the natural world,
We
right?
actually, yeah, we need to get to profitability in order to save the natural world because otherwise you will not be able to fund the operations that will be required in order for you to make a meaningful impact. So existing technologies, in my view, are going to really struggle to get to a cost profile that makes sense. And it's because even though cultured meat is a new industry, the technologies that they are using are not new. So they actually have been inherited by the biopharmaceutical industry. Basically, these cocktails of proteins and chemicals that people can use to grow the cells. It works extremely well. You can make meat. You can make any sort of cell-based product or cell. The problem is how much it costs you to do it. And when you're using the biopharmaceutical processes and biopharmaceutical hardware, it costs too much. And unlike with a therapeutic, with therapeutics, you can basically charge whatever the hell you want. And the reason you can charge whatever the hell you want is because someone's about to die and they will, beg, borrow, and steal to make that work for them. With meat, it is a very different value proposition. People are not going to pay $500 for a burger because they'll be like, well, I don't need this. It's not the same as a, it's not the same as a life-saving drug. And so
Although
because
one could argue that life-saving drugs shouldn't cost a literal arm and leg
they
either.
should not. They should not. And I'm all for democratizing healthcare. And that is, one of the things that Prolific Machines is working on is in addition to cultured meat. We know we also we have an antibody program. We're getting into cell and gene therapy. And the reasoning for doing that is because we want to bring down the cost and democratize access to these things. However, the reality of the situation as of today is that those drugs are still extremely expensive. Some of these antibody treatments are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per person per year. Some of these cell-based therapy treatments are upwards of $500,000 per person per year. So it is insane. And Prolific has a way to reduce the cost of these things. And it's a combination of engineering the cells to not need these expensive inputs, also completely rethinking and redesigning the bioreactor, and inventing software which can really, really precisely control the cells. And when you can really precisely control the cells, a lot of interesting things can happen. For example, increased yields, increased product quality, et cetera.
So what does this look like
There's a lot of
in
rabbit
terms?
holes
But what does this look like
going
in terms of your current process and where you're at? Like,
on.
are you is your lab work mostly like on the hardware side, like the mechanical engineering components? Is it on the software side?
We have a
Where are
very
you at right now?
multidisciplinary team. So we have a large synthetic biology team that is engineering the cells. We have a very talented physics engineering team that is building the new bioreactors, and then we have a software team, data analytics, like the software data science team that basically builds the software to control the cells. So, and then we have a material science team, cell biology team. It's extremely multidisciplinary.
Yeah.
That has its challenges and advantages. And the food science team, I like it. You learn a lot.
How does the final product looks like? I mean, can I find a New York steak cultured by this kind of technology? Or because I'm imagining like a package, but like a square package full of raw meat, and it kind of looks disgusting in my mind, but how does this look like?
So it will look in eventually it will look indistinguishable to the meat that you purchase. You might even pick it up by accident. The cultured meat that is produced as of today mainly falls into the category of expensive mush. The reason is because it's very hard to pattern cells, and this is one of the things that Prolific has been working on. So we have two main work streams. One is just growing cells in bulk in a way that is lowest cost in the industry, as far as we're aware. However, this does not make you a T-bone steak. It just makes you basically a mush of cells, and that mush of cells is useful for things like burgers, sausages, chicken nuggets, anything where like structure doesn't really matter. However, this does not solve the problem. The second part of this is actually being able to pattern those cells and turn them into to steaks,
Chicken breasts,
sashimi,
yeah.
or tissues for transplantation. If you're using human cells, you can make skin, you could make kidneys, you could make livers. So there is a lot of the R&D that we need to do for cultured meat is not cultured meat specific. So it has large implications for human health,
For
which is why
sure.
Prolific is launching a human health division after our next funding round later this year, for this very reason, because we realize that so much of the work that we're doing has applications beyond cultured meat. It would be a shame if we just got siloed in cultured
Of
meat.
course.
Of course, you need to balance that with being focused, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, because you've got to make it work. You got to make it profitable before you can keep on dreaming. As much of a bummer as that can be, it's completely understandable. First things first. In terms of, turning this mush into structure, are we talking about like fat cells as well eventually, bone? I mean a steak's, I don't like a whole lot of gristle, but there's something about that flavor, that texture, that fattiness that of course makes it great. The marbling and all of this
We
stuff.
can make fat cells, we can make muscle cells, we can make cartilage, we can make bone. All of these things are just made out of cells. You know,
Wow.
cartilage is made out of chondrocytes, bone is made out of osteocytes and osteoblasts. And it's like all of these things are made out. We are just big balls of cells. Cows are just big balls of cells.
Yeah, 99 whatever percent water or something.
We do not. We do. We don't. We do not need to. We do not need the animals anymore in order to grow the animal tissue. And this is actually, you know, not a new idea. So Winston Churchill, in his essay, I think in 1931, was the first.
Almost 100 years ago.
He was the first to point out that it was extremely dumb that we were growing an entire chicken just for the chicken breast and the chicken wing.
Wow.
And he was like, well, what about the beak? What about the brain? Like, what about all the feathers? Like, all of this stuff is just getting thrown away. Like, we're growing up these calories at massive cost to the environment, and then we are feeding them into these animals that turn those calories into some things that we want, and then a lot of things that we don't
want. Don't, yeah.
And then the things that we don't want, we throw away. The things that we want, we consume. Hmm. But so, for example, with a cow, it's like the vast majority of the calories that you put into the cow do not get converted into steaks and burgers. They get
they get converted into gelatin and my tennis shoes and
but a lot of it gets converted into things that don't get used for anything, like brain tissue and horn.
Here in Mexico,
and
people eat the brain.
Yes, at that
cost. Most people don't barbecue cow brains, you know.
It's not barbecued. It's actually boiled. They're tacos de cabeza, and includes pretty much everything that comes from the head. So, like, the cheek meat, the tongue, the brain, all of that. I think even in some cases the eyes. But it all gets kind of boiled together, and it's very savory. And when you're eating it, it doesn't look like any of those.
I don't like it, and I'm Mexican.
I like it. I'll eat it, and I'm not Mexican. How funny is that? Well, I'm an honorary Mexican.
I don't know if you want to go down this route, but viewers might find it interesting. There is a really, really interesting, like, moral, philosophical discussion to be had around this topic, which is
clearly
why. What is the reasoning that we use to justify our behavior as of today on this topic? And most people think, myself included, that the farming and killing animals for food is acceptable. And I was certainly raised in a family that did that. I still eat a lot of meat, full disclosure, so I'm definitely a hypocrite. But the reasoning that we use to justify this is something that I've always found very interesting, because I think it falls into one of two categories. First category is, humans are smarter than these other animals, and so this is why we can justify farming and eating them. But when you interrogate that a little bit deeper, well, humans exist on a spectrum of intelligence, right? And so if we are justifying farming and killing animals,
of the three of us, Dennis, you would have the right to be eating America, or I.
But if you think about this for a second, it gets kind of weird, where it's like, if the justification for eating animals is that we're smarter for them, we're smarter than them, and so that's why it's okay. Well, does that mean that the smarter humans should be able to eat the less smart humans? Yeah. Nobody would think that that is acceptable.
It's probably a less smart human. I would say no, please don't.
Right.
Yeah. Right, but so, this so, product. So that, sorry, so that, sorry, Dennis.
I'll just say the second line of reasoning. So that first one obviously doesn't make sense. The second line of reasoning is that we're stronger than, we are the dominant species. You know, we are stronger than these animals. And so that is the justification for why we farm them and we eat them. But again, humans exist on a spectrum of strength. And so does that mean that the stronger humans should be allowed to farm and eat the weaker humans? I think everyone would say no, myself.
Probably not. You can even go back to the very basis of that and say, I would venture to say we're probably not even stronger compared to most animals. Like, right. I put me in the ocean and a shark's going to win.
100%.
Yeah.
And so I find this really interesting, because I don't think that we have really strong reasoning for why we do what we do. I think we tell ourselves a story for why it's okay, but I suspect that 100 years from now or 500 years from now, we'll look back at what we're doing today and we'll be like, what the hell were we doing? Our great-grandchildren will probably look at us and be like, you guys were monsters.
That tends to be history, right?
I say this as someone who can't stop eating meat. This is the fucked up thing. I know all of this, and I still can't stop eating meat. And I know how bad it is for the environment. I know how bad it is for the animals. But it's almost like a predetermined outcome. I go to the restaurant, and obviously I'm getting the cheeseburger. It's like, I don't even think.
But I mean, we could sit here and argue the morality of it all day. I mean, if you look at the natural world, you know, there are predators and there are animals that eat meat and only meat. And it's just, I think we're kind of in this weird in between. But, you know, morality aside, I think everyone can get on board with the idea of saving the natural world, right? Mm-hmm. And helping to have a less of an impact while meat is still a human necessity, right? As we figure that out. I wanted to bring it back to earlier. You mentioned the software controlling the cells. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this is something new for us in terms of what we sort of heard, at least for me, that I can recall on Dojo Live. We talk about a lot of software, a lot of it in biotech, medtech, health tech. Most of the time in terms of artificial intelligence, it has to do with, sorry, working from home, but I had to bring my kids along with me. Honey, daddy, go downstairs. I can't get away. I can't even get Zoe uninterrupted at the office. But my question was, how are they controlling the cells software? Like, there's software that we got counting cells, analyzing cells, all these types of applications, but controlling it, that was a new kind of word for me.
I can imagine that you can control that with liquids inside of the cells or something, like stimulating them to go from to, I don't know.
So there's limits to how much I can say on a live podcast without my lawyers getting very upset. But I can say this much, which is the machines that can control biology today can control biology only at a very superficial level. So they can move cells from A to B, they can move liquid from A to B, but they cannot really control the cells. They cannot control the internal environment of the cell. And so the machines that Prolific are building, that we're building, will be the first in the world that can truly control cells, control the internal environment of the cells. And
so is this sort of like with the sea turtles or whatever, like depending on whatever temperature they incubate, it determines if they're male or female? I don't even know if that's true. It's something I've heard. Kind of like that kind of thing?
Well, temperature regulation is important for cells because you have to basically recreate. I mean, the cells grow in, I don't know if you've ever been to a brewery. Have you guys ever been to a brewery? So there's these big metal tanks in these breweries where you brew beer. Have you ever seen these big metal tanks where you make beer?
Yes.
It's basically the same for cultured meat or biomanufacturing. You grow the cells in these big metal tanks and these big metal, you have to have the right temperature. You have to have the right humidity. You have to have the right pH, the right nutrients. And then the way it works, you take a small tissue sample from a cow or whatever animal you want. You can isolate the stem cells from this tissue sample. You can then put them into the bioreactor with the right temperature and all the right conditions. And then you add in, you know, sugar, amino acids, water, oxygen, carbon dioxide. And you're basically tricking the cells into thinking that they're still inside the cow, but they're not inside the cow. You've just mimicked all of the internal environments of the cow, but in a stainless steel tank. And of course you need software controlling all of these processes. And the cells will grow and you can turn them into the things that you want to turn them into. And it's not just meat. It is human tissue. It is antibodies. It is your next cancer treatment. It is leather. It is fuel. It is like biomanufacturing can make pretty much everything.
Do you ever kill this meat, this agriculture meat? I'm thinking,
we rescue them from we rescue them from factory farms.
There are cells, right?
It's just like a sample.
Yeah.
Just like if you want to draw blood from a human to run a test,
So the tissue samples that we take from the cows or whatever animals you want to use are normally like 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter, you know, really tiny and that is enough. Like that one, you don't have to kill the animal. That one tissue sample, in theory, is enough to feed the entire world forever if you can get the conditions right and you have all of the facilities, et cetera.
Oh yeah, but
But the other, go ahead.
I mean the meat, no, the sample. I mean, I think that the meat is going to grow because the cells are going to reproduce and everything is going to expand. I don't know if this meat is ever an organism that is going to be killed because I want to eat it. And so this means that this is like a new animal because it's another species.
So this is an interesting question. This is again going back to philosophy, I think. It's around like, the question I think is around sentience and are these cells sentient? If you put a whole bunch of them together, does that make them sentient? I think the answer is no. Obviously, we still have some outstanding questions on how consciousness works, but pretty much everybody agrees that you do need to have a brain and a nervous system in order to be conscious.
Right. In this sense, it's going to be no different than a piece of grain or a stalk of corn.
So yes, these cells. Obviously, we do not we don't have any cow brains in these bioreactors, so I do not expect any of our cells to be.
Until you get to the Mexican market, then you're going to
Yeah, the Mexican brain market completely untapped. Massive market. Okay, we're pivoting the
I mean, I do find this absolutely fascinating. I do have one devil's advocate question kind of here for you. In terms of coming up with all these extra ingredients, the sugar, the oxygen, the hydrogen, these big machines, does that not also have its impact on the environment? I mean, is this win some, lose some? I mean, coming back to even now, like if we're looking for alternative energy sources, like wind turbines, and then this is like an eyesore, and the turbines themselves are, what's the word? Contamination, and they have to be buried. And so, I mean, I think it's always this idea of trying to find the alternative and improving that alternative and making it better and better for the future. But I mean, this doesn't come without its
This is an
cost,
important
right?
this is an important and topical question because you're right. There are costs. If you need a stainless steel tank, there's a greenhouse gas emissions associated with the steel. If you need concrete, there are greenhouse gas emissions associated with the concrete. Now, traditional animal agriculture also uses steel and concrete, so some of these emissions are going to happen regardless. But you're right. So there was recently a paper that came out that suggested that cultured meat could be worse for the environment than traditional meat, and this paper has been refuted by several different sources because it's basically nonsense. They took the worst possible case scenario for cultured meat and the best possible case scenario for traditional animal agriculture, and came to the conclusion that cultured meat was worse, but they didn't even take into account any of the technologies that are coming online. The reality is that nobody knows what the environmental impact of cultured meat is truly going to be because nobody has yet scaled cultured meat to the point where you would be able to make that assessment. So anyone who says anything about the long-term environmental impact of cultured meat in a way that is conclusive is kidding themselves
Yeah.
because we don't even have the data in order to make that assessment.
And the good
However,
news is, even if it was, I guess it's reversible, right? You
so
just stop.
So, so that there are ways to further. So there's data to suggest that cultured meat is around 80 to 90% less greenhouse gas emissive at scale relative to conventional animal agriculture. And several different sources have put this forward. You can do your own research. You do not need to trust me. But that still has not yet been proven. These are still speculations about what the future will be. And so the processes and the bioreactors and the facilities, all of these things are still being invented. And so we don't fully know what the cultured meat production is going to look like 100 years from now.
Or the social impact. I mean, I'm thinking the kosher certificate in products, is this going to be able to be certificate by kosher? Because you cannot mix different kind of animals. If the people is open to have the idea of eating this in a normal day,
Yeah, even just the market for
religions,
it. Like,
exactly.
will the public be willing?
I pray over ourselves all the time, so I think absolutely kosher.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's a good question, even if we are ready,
There
right?
is actually a rabbi, the head rabbi in Israel did say that cultured meat was kosher recently. So you can Google it. And but anyway, there's an important point to make here, which is that for the environmental impact of cultured meat, you should not just assume the worst case scenario for every single parameter. You know, for example, there's companies like Boston Metal that are making steel that is carbon neutral or carbon potentially even carbon negative in the future. There are companies like Brimstone Energy that is making concrete that is carbon negative. So you have to also take into account all of these other innovations that are happening that could be fed into the cultured meat process that could make it even more environmentally friendly. And there are ideas that I have and others have in order to make cultured meat carbon neutral or carbon negative. And one of those ideas is to use bacteria to actually suck methane from the atmosphere and use these methanotrophic bacteria to produce the sugars and the amino acids that you need to feed into your cultured meat process. So then you're basically converting greenhouse gases in the atmosphere into sugars and amino acids, which you are then feeding into your cow cells to turn into meat. So then
So,
by
and
eating,
essentially reversing global
you can
warming.
reverse global warming by eating burgers, which is my preferred mode of reversing global warming.
And we are truly playing God now. I think this is it's absolutely fantastic, Dennis. It's been a pleasure, learning from you all about science in general, cultured meats in particular. And I've got quite a few takeaways. I really do like. I think the high levels here are just to think big, to think in that scope, to also, I think, within that scope, think through process, right? And always to have the long term in mind. I think that's quite fantastic. Are there any one single, we've kind of overshot our half hour here, but I do want to ask you, what would be your words of wisdom? What would you share? With other kind of founders, leaders, these big idea folks, or people who want to be big idea folks. What have you found that works, and what have you found that doesn't?
I don't know if I'm wise enough to be sharing words of wisdom on the internet, but something that I've always found to be a good guiding principle is focus on hiring people that are far smarter and far more competent than you are. If you can consistently do that, that's what I try to do. And I think I've done that very successfully at Prolific. Pretty much everyone that works there is smarter. More smart and more competent than I am, which is great. If you can consistently do that, then I think you have a very high probability of success. And if you cannot consistently do that, then I think you have a very low probability of success. Hopefully, you yourself are at a baseline level of competence and intelligence so that this makes sense.
It's smart enough not to get eaten by the really smart people.
But I guess my final thing to say is that if anyone's really interested in cultured meat or biomanufacturing, Prolific is growing and we're scaling, and so we have many opportunities. You can email me at dennis@prolific-machines.com, and I'm generally pretty responsive. So,
All right, love it. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Dennis, again for sharing your time and your words of wisdom. Your should I words of wisdom? I'm kidding. It's extremely smart to hire smarter people than you. But thank you so much again for introducing us to Cultured Meat, to Prolific Machines, how software is involved in that as well. The idea of software controlling cells was a new one for me. We wish you and your adventurers nothing but success for your sake and for the planet's. All right.
you guys.
So thank you. Stick around for just a minute as we go off air. But before we do, we'd like to let our audience know about the two shows we've got coming up next week. Oh, I got it. Are you ready? I got it. All right. So we've got two shows. One is on August 1st, which is going to be Tuesday. And then we've got another coming up on Thursday the 3rd. First up is Scott Stewart, CEO of Turnaround Management Association. He is going to be talking about the dramatic disruption of Silicon Valley with layoffs and bank closures. And is Silicon Valley basically facing a meltdown? Chun chun chun, we hope not. And then that'll be followed up with Lori Schaefer, CEO of Digital Wave Technology. She's going to be talking about how AI is leading to profitable sales, process efficiency, and higher customer satisfaction. And yeah, that's going to be next week, Tuesday and Thursday, right here in Dojo Live, 10 o'clock Pacific. We'll see you then. Thanks again, Dennis.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Check out past episodes, transcripts, blogs, and more on our website, dojo.nearsoft.com.